white people taking over, that they resented a black woman being in charge, when in fact, Yatrice Leet had taken over the job that had been Valerie Van Isler, another woman of color. And she also took over Bernard White's job, a gentleman of color. And so when I was sitting here Tuesday and I saw sitting there Sharan Harper and Janice Bryant and Bernard White and Robert Knight and Errol Maitland, I looked around and I said to Janice, where are all the white people? We've been denied. We were promised that we weren't going to be taking over again, and it didn't happen. But I listened to a Democracy Now! Tuesday, and Amy Goodman, who was finally back on the air with one of the most important programs across the country, was interviewing people, alerting us about a program about pacifists during World War II. And one of the people she interviewed was a man named George Hauser. George Hauser, in 1952, I've been joined in the studio by Janice K. Bryan and Sam Rivera. I got to get these two stories out, and then we'll get on with it. Amy interviewed George Hauser. Well, that immediately set off bells in my head. In 1952, when I was 17, I went to Washington for the summer as part of a student group representing the University of Denver. And we were living, because we were a mixed, Washington in that time was a totally southern, racially segregated city. And because our group was mixed, the house that we lived in, the Barksdale house, was in the black community. And our social life was across the street at the American Veterans Committee, the left-wing answer to the American Legion. That's where our social life was. But we had a lot of political and social activists. One of the people who came to us was George Hauser, who with Jim Farmer had just started a group called CORE, or just started as far as I knew. And he told us that they were trying to integrate the People's Drug Stores, the largest chain of drug stores in Washington, which had counters but wouldn't serve black people, and that who of us would like to join them every Sunday after church. After the church got out, we would go at 12 o'clock, sit 40 kids, black and white, one black kid, one white kid, all kids my age, college kids, and try to integrate the People's Drug Store. And we were trained and briefed on passive resistance. That's what was my introduction to Gandhi. We were told how we would be assaulted, how we would be yelled at. And the experience I'll never forget is one Sunday, in preparation, knowing that I might be yelled at, I'll never forget this pinched up face of an old white woman who picked me out of everybody was picked out for by somebody or other. And the hate on her face when she called me nigger lover and spit at me. And I was trained that if you were spit at, you would let it, that was your badge of honor. And the spit dribbled down my face. And 50 years later, when I hear kids, young men at the Fortune Society, young black guys, call each other nigger, and I say, and I question them, and they say, you don't understand, you sound like my grandma, I've often said this. And I say, I do understand because I can see the face of hate using that name. And I remember it, and I remember George Hauser teaching me about passive resistance. And I hadn't seen or heard of him in 50 years, and I heard him on Amy Goodman's show on Tuesday. On Thursday on Democracy Now!, she was doing a program on the health effects as a result of the World Trade Center, the school kids at Stuyvesant, the police and the firemen working. And I was listening intently because I've had bronchitis since mid-November, and she's had a lot of cases, and it may or may not be as a result of the World Trade Center. I had to leave at 9:30, and I ran out of the house thinking, well, I won't hear the rest of the program. And I jumped into a cab, and the cab driver had Democracy Now! On. I hadn't been in a cab in 6 months that had BAI on the radio. And I said to him, turn that up. You have Democracy Now! On. And he turned around with a big smile and he said, Amy is back and Bernard is back at 7 o'clock. My day can start again. And I was emotionally, that hit me emotionally, the impact of people around the city that you wouldn't know. The driver was from Ghana. We talked about Nkrumah and the African nationalism of the last century, and he was so excited that somebody else listened to WBAI. But he said that his day would begin at 7 o'clock when Bernard White and Amy Goodman would come on. His work day began at 7, and he said, now it can begin complete, and I have my day with WBAI. So we're back. and we have a lot of responsibilities, and we hope we can fulfill them. As soon as Lady Smith Black Mambazo gives you a little bit of Don't Forget, a song called Don't Forget, I'll be joined by Janice K. Bryant, guest of honor from the National Board of WBAI, and my co-host Sam Rivera, father of three.
Don't forget, don't forget, why do I do it one thing? Don't forget, why do I do it one thing? As we are learning here to discover the knowledge of the sense, which you don't know.
You too. Opportunities.
There is a chance to choose your talent among those things. Remember, remember, why you are only one thing. Remember, don't forget. Why you are only one thing. Remember, remember, why you are only one thing. Remember, don't forget. Why you are only one thing. Remember, remember, why you are only one thing. Remember, don't forget, why you are only one thing.
When you have a home here,
when you have a home here, don't forget it, there is another home.
When you enjoy here,
when you enjoy here, realize that there is another place where you can enjoy forever, forever,
listen,
forever,
listen,
forever,
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 forever, forever.
Home here,
forever.
Don't forget,
forever.
There is another home,
forever.
Where you can enjoy,
forever.
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 Oh, my God, sure.
It's got to say, Jana, Jana, hey, 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 Oh, my God, sure. It's got to say, Jana, Jana, hey, 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 Don't forget why you endure it.
Lady Smith, Black Mambazo, Sam Rivera.
Yes.
Before we get back to the status of WBAI, your news is all important. When you last were here, you threatened us that you were going to become the father of twins in February. And you were going to move in January and have twins in February, and you've reversed that. The twins
right.
are born. The
right.
boys
the twins,
are.
The twins are here.
And they are?
And they are Jaden David after David Rothenberg. And
that's why he's in the will.
And Jason Taylor, so Rivera, both of them.
4 pounds, 6 ounces.
4, 5, and 4, 12.
And are they out of the hospital? Because you had
out
a hole
the
in
hospital.
There.
Yes.
And Sam said to me, oh, it was an easy pregnancy, and I mean an easy childbirth. And I said, from you. I said, I said, the mother would be here, how easy it was.
I didn't, you know, I mean, comparison, especially twins.
How much was she in labor?
A couple.
Oh, gee,
and,
that's easy.
Well, I'm saying in comparison. And her first son, she has,
what?
Well, because her son, she has a son who was, she was in labor for 27 hours.
Oh.
So I was, David didn't let me finish, but I know I have to be careful with that kind of statement.
So
Can't you tell? Look at me.
I saw the baby. Oh, you shaved because you weren't going to shave until they got home.
I didn't shave until they got home, so I got to shave.
Are they sleeping?
They're sleeping a lot, but they eat. You know, you have to feed them every couple hours.
Babies are like that. It's happened since Cain and Abel.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, but it's exciting. When they were first born, initially we didn't know if they were going to be identical because they were in separate sacks. And when they were born, you know, they're so small. They're very small. So we were like, well, they kind of look alike. It's hard to tell. And so trying to figure out if they were identical. And now it's like, uh-oh.
Are they in one crib?
They're in one bassinet. That's how small they are. So not even a crib.
So you're going to bring them into the office soon?
Yeah, eventually. Right now we can't for a while.
I guess we have to schlep to Staten Island to see Jason.
There you go, right. We saw the doctor yesterday, and he said, keep him away from crowds, and Fortune's pretty crowded.
All right. Oh, come play a visit. Our other guest in the studio, the last time you were here on a Saturday morning, the day of the muffin incident, was the December 22nd, 2000.
Yeah, I was weeping and wailing.
Our guest is Janice K. Bryant, who was attacked. Every year you get attacked by somebody. Last week at the board meeting, you were severely attacked.
I've been thinking about that. The more I think about it, the worse it seems.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
I had left Friday before it happened, and on Saturday morning when I was listening, I heard you being attacked on the air by the man who attacked you Friday night, was rewarded by being made anchor on Saturday, and I rushed up because I was so incensed for you, and then I heard what really happened on the Friday night and was startled.
Yeah, I think had it not been for the guards there, and I didn't know what was happening, I think I probably would have gotten hurt. I think he intended to inflict some physical.
It was most unpleasant. None of which was put on the air when and all of the people who had been running the station, filled with hate and anger and violence, continued and ignored those realities to listeners.
Well, it's over and we're looking ahead.
Yes, we are, and you're now on the board.
Very exciting. It's still a little shocking, but
I do want to add one other thing about it. At the board meeting, when the public had been led to believe that it was a white takeover from black activists, speaking in behalf of the listeners, some of the most eloquent and articulate longtime activists from the black community in the metropolitan area were heard. Rashida Abu Bakar Ashmeel was poetic, historic, moving. And you could feel the deep personal commitment as a listener that she felt. And known anybody that's been active in social justice and racial justice in the last quarter of a century in this city knows of Rashida and her work. Anthony Sloan, a longtime BAI producer, was pragmatic and forceful and funny and powerful. Vasilich Machami, was also funny when he lamented the fact that everybody was either suspended, banned, fired, or preempted, and he just didn't have a program, not even a title, was precise and smart and clear in his thoughts, and again, a man who's known for his activism in education and had a wonderful program. When I first met him, he was on Saturday mornings after us, and then the quintessential activist, eloquent voice, Omar Wally Clay, just spelled it out. And he, by the way, that this morning, the program usually heard following ours has been preempted, and Grandpa Al Lewis will be returning to these airways with a 2.5-hour special.
Yes.
And his guests will be two of those silent voices from the black community never heard from before, Omar Wally Clay and Father Lawrence Lucas, who have always been very hesitant to express themselves and very compromising in their principles. Father Lawrence Lucas is so candid that you sometimes shake when he makes his comments. He spoke up at Fortune Society to the class I teach. I said to him afterwards, boy, you don't waste a second. The machine gun is going. When if he thinks you've compromised or he puts it out there. Anyway, I always said that I thought the reason that Al Lewis was suspended so early was because you and I often thought that they would not fire white people so they could maintain their claim of whites taking over the station from from black. But I think Grandpa was fired or suspended or deprived of his airtime because he continually had Omawale Clay and Father Lawrence Lucas on as guests, and they were so clear, reflecting, so powerful reflection of the black community and how they felt about the BAI takeover, that there was no way that they were going to let that continue. And we lost Al Lewis's voice in this, and which we'll be smelling the cigar before we hear the voice this morning.
I don't know which comes first.
Oh, the cigar, the cigar or the mouth. They're interchangeable. But that's a voice that will not be silenced, and will be back with us. And so I urge you all to stay tuned when we depart from the studio, because Grandpa will be back. And to hear Omawale Clay and Father Lawrence Lucas is to hear two of the clearest voices from the black community in the metropolitan area that are both forceful and eloquent.
It's going to be a full day today. I think Radio Free Aaron's going to be doing something special, too.
Well, then, they've never been suspended. They've only been preempted.
And they've never been quiet, either.
No. John McDonough only gets preempted. That's a special category. That's all his own. We'll have a musical interlude in a moment. We'll talk about the rest of the world. Here is a woman talking about a longtime social activist and lover of Free WBAI, Odetta. Before we go on, Sam and Janice Kay, many of the hosts have been thanking the listeners, and it would be remiss of me because the work of listeners, it's unparalleled in radio that I know of, in which listeners got so involved with hundreds and hundreds, thousands of meetings. Personally, the number of calls and letters, many of you may have emailed me, but my email doesn't work anymore because I'm getting 100 a day and I couldn't stand going through it all and couldn't get up to Fortune, so it's been disconnected. So I may not have heard from some of you that tried to reach me, but the calls and the letters were very emotional. You, Janice, when I came down Tuesday and saw you all, I was surprised at the depth of the emotion that some of us felt. But I want to thank the many people that called, particularly Pat Colucci in New Jersey, continual support, and Safira Robb, whose clarity and wisdom and wit.
She really helped get us through.
Because of her spirit.
Yes.
I'm not joking because I'm crying, if you're listening, Safira. I'm joking because Janice gave me a little piece of muffin. The same muffin that she threw at you, Teresa.
Oh, stop saying that.
No, actually, Janice, what happened is Janice flew her arm and the muffins went on the floor and she was accused of violence. I want you to talk about your arrest, too. But
there's an agency called Fortune.
I need your services.
But Janice, I just again I want to thank the listeners and Pat Colucci of New Jersey and Safira Robb in the Bronx. Safira's endless conversations, particularly after I got canned, because I knew it was going to happen. As a matter of fact, I wanted it to happen because I hated coming down here. And I used to call you and Bernard and say, should I quit? No, and you advised me to stay, that it's better for you to stay than to quit. I hated coming here. I hated the joylessness of the place.
Does it feel different today?
Oh, well, Tuesday when I came in, when there were so many people and I saw laughter again in the hall. You know what it was like? I only came down about four or five times during the year when I was summoned. Do you remember? Remember in Planet of the Apes when they arrive and you see no people and you see little heads peering out from in between? I remember when I was visiting my friend Chuck Bergansky in Beverly Hills and we went to jog and he said, it's like Planet of the Apes in Beverly Hills. And I said, why? He said, watch, when you run, when you jog on the streets there, you don't see anybody, but occasionally a Venetian blind will open. And he says, it's like Planet of the Apes. It was also a little like the Stepford Wives because people would walk around whispering. There was no... What I knew from visiting BAI over the years is that there was always activity and political arguments and people discussing and community activists. We're going to be invaded by a cigar right now. We're going to be invaded by a cigar.
Why are you so quiet?
He's got a cigar.
I don't believe this. He's not saying a word.
Now, Jillian's been excited about meeting him, by the way.
Jillian, very that's excited. Grandpa Alois Sam Rivera. Al, before you step out, there's one thing I want to ask you. People have called in. I announced that you're going to be on at 10:30.
Yes.
The previous guest has been the previous host has been preempted.
Preempted.
But the question I wanted to ask you.
On a slow boat to China.
Say goodbye. No, I'm not
Bye,
saying.
Clayton.
I'm not saying that to you. I want to know, is it?
Grandpa's so shy.
Al, people have asked. I announced that Homer Wally Clay and Father Lucas are going to be your guests.
That's right.
But somebody called and asked, are you having an open house for listeners? I didn't want to announce it until...
Yes, from 10:30 to 12.
They don't have to stay downstairs like they did for the last...
They can come up to show ID downstairs.
They can come upstairs.
They come up.
Yes.
Wow.
Why not?
That's the way it used to be.
Really?
Yeah, anybody can come here.
And I got to tell you.
So divided.
You know all the cameras?
Yes.
I spray painted them.
Could you do us one big favor?
What?
Get that cigar out of here, please.
No, I'm not.
You
wouldn't
cigar.
Say it to Fidel Castro or George Burns. You only say it to a lower echelon, right?
Is Karen Lewis with you?
Yes, she is.
Would you ask her to come in so we could have a hug?
Jillian was excited about meeting him.
Jillian, Sam's daughter, is... Jillian, you're what, 13?
Yeah.
And your first time meeting Grandpa? Very shy and retiring, isn't he? He's very held back. Janice K. Bryan.
Yes, sir.
Many people don't know because, before, and this is tied into that, is that one of the real scandals for me through all of this is the New York Times with their paper of record. Failure. Hi, Garen Lewis. How are you? Hi, Bernard White. How are you? Bernard White, Sam Rivera.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's Sam's daughter. Sam's daughter, Jillian.
Hi, how are you?
It's like, It's like a house party. People hugging that haven't seen each other. Karen, you haven't seen Janice in a long time?
Oh, last week.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw her last week at those meetings. Yes, indeed.
One of the things I was starting to say is that one of the shockers for me in the last year, and now we'll probably say, why were you so shocked, was the failure of the New York Times, the paper of record, to either to report what was happening here and to have an editorial position, because it was a free speech story. And for segments of our city, if it's not in the Times, it hasn't happened. And they have been negligent to the point of shame, I think, in their failure to record this basic free speech story. It also, the political ties and the influences of the Democratic Party. David Hinckley in the news, and is it Peter Gallagher?
Peter Gallagher
is an actor. Peter Goodman in Newsday continually gave reports. But and Nat Hentoff in The Voice, and The Voice does an article this week on Amy. But the failure of the Times, they did three stories. The first, on the day of the coup, they reported a meeting that had taken 2 weeks previously. By the time that story ran, it was irrelevant and insignificant and inaccurate. They did a puff piece on Utrice when in the public affairs column.
Private lives.
And then about 2 weeks ago, they did a little story saying everything has been settled, the compromise has been reached, with a very complex story that they reduced to irrelevancy. And not an ounce of concern about the gag rules and the suppression of voices. And the Times should be ashamed of themselves with their great influence and power. Now, many of the people in the black community said to me, what are you so surprised about? They haven't covered stories in the black community. Somebody pointed out the story of the that thing at 125th Street in the water. What do we call that? The polluting plant that they put in.
Sanitation.
The sanitation thing that
125th Street.
No, it's 125th with a park over it. Is it?
Yeah, 145th.
That's 145th. How the community uptown was in arms about it, and that the time, it's not, if it doesn't happen below 96th Street and
didn't happen.
And this story didn't happen as far as Times readers are concerned. The irony of it is that wherever I went in the city in the last week, people would come up to me, like the taxi drivers, that back. And when I got out of that taxi, a woman, big white woman with a big hat looking like society woman on the cover of the New Yorker, said, you're going to be on the air again, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. Wherever I went, from all communities, people seem to be aware of it.
I'm just sitting here because I'm watching you. It's like, David, you know, when I hear you say sitting here for the last few months of life,
I hated,
you know,
being here.
You're just so different. This is I'm being entertained at the same time.
Okay.
You're so excited.
All right, we were going to.
And Bernard's here, and I got a great compliment. I answered the phone before, and somebody said, "This Bernard." I was like, "Oh, wait a minute." Well, you sound like him. Well, I said, "I'll work on the other stuff."
Why don't you take your coats off, Bernard, and Karen, sit down, or you have work to do.
Well, yeah, we have.
Well, I want to play the. Janice, tell us about the arrest. A lot of people don't know that.
I will say this.
What?
First of all,
force
Janice,
yourself.
You know, when Janice came here, she was just, as many of us who find WBAI, just became fascinated in the things that people were talking about. And we did a lot of stuff around what was taking place in the 60s, the civil rights movement, and how people went to jail, you know, by the hundreds, by the thousands.
And on the apartheid, on the sanctions,
right,
for South Africa.
And Janice said, you know, I've never been to jail.
Well, we took
I
care of that.
See what that's like.
And that was a story that should have been in
Once
the paper.
Once was enough.
And Janice, my fondness for you has been matched by my admiration, because...
Oh, stop.
No, I know you don't want to be embarrassed, yep. but
embarrassing.
You were incredible. I have to say, Amy, during those brutal on-air attacks, was an incredible force of strength that angered me and inspired me. I don't know how she withstood it. She was attacked on air, and
physically accosted off air, just would come right back the next day.
And what is that sound? Who's trying to reach us? Is that Sam's phone?
Not Sam's phone.
Somebody's phone.
You know, the other thing is we brought back all of the new technology that we had.
Yes,
yeah.
The return of the cell phone. Janice, you were arrested. Under what circumstances?
The local advisory board, which, as far as I know, has been having meetings at this station as long as there's been a local advisory board, I guess 15, 20 years. And after the lockouts, the local advisory board went through every requisite that the station management set up, you know, notify me and, you know, whatever time they, I think they sent certified letters and got everything signed. They dotted all their I's and crossed their T's to have a meeting here. And they invited me to be a speaker at the meeting. Well, when we got here, there were all kind of machinations and back and forth. And what ended up happening is we ended up sitting outside in the hallway because they wouldn't let us in. And I tell you, for me to sit at the door of WBAI and have people who are my friends look at me and tell me that I couldn't come in was an otherworldly experience, because it just, you know, I had belongings on the other side of the door.
It's like going home and your mother saying, who are you?
Right, exactly. It was so, and it was saddening, you know, and few people came out, you know. Okay, Bernard.
Bernard White very delicately just knocked over a pile of, by the way, Bernard, I brought back a lot of these that were in my sock closet. I brought those, I didn't know.
So,
Bernard, before you break something, why don't you just sit down? She's in the midst of a histrionic tale. Go sit. She's picking up. Go ahead, Jess.
Okay. And nine of us were arrested, and they tried to arrest. There were a couple of people in wheelchairs here, too, and they wanted to be arrested, Ann Emmerman and some other folks. And the police sort of tricked them, because they told them, well, we'll arrest you when we get downstairs. And once they got downstairs and got outside, they said, no, now we don't have to arrest you because you're off
the
premises.
That's when I started referring to you as the Washington Heights One. Free the Washington Heights One.
Well, there were, and some of the folks, they, because of the job
you
they
were held
had,
overnight for two.
We were held for almost 2 days.
We were trying to find
you. I was so upset.
I think, Karen, didn't you and I, I was on the phone with Al trying to...
I wanted to see, and I had enough after the first few hours. Well, see, I was, they fooled me, because when I got down to the first precinct, everybody was very nice. But when they take you downtown to 100 Center Street, they ain't playing down there.
Well, that's when we started calling you Ma Bryant.
Well,
and
you don't have to worry about it.
Karen and I were...
You're guilty until proven guilty. And
absolutely, and the worst thing... was seeing all these kids. We didn't get in until about like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, because it was like, you know, when the planes are lined up to take off, they had so many trucks, they arrested so many people that night. We had to come in like on a conveyor belt. So we're sitting outside. Wow. And then when we finally get in and we're lining up, nothing but teenagers coming through, sending everybody up to Spofford. It looked like high school. It was unbelievable. I said, what is this? That's all you saw was children.
That's what we have.
It was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So then when we got inside, there were a lot of kids. There was a pregnant girl. You know, she would just sleep the whole time. It was really, really, really bad food, some kind of grain.
What was the final jurisdiction on your case?
It isn't over yet. We go back to court the 22nd.
All right,
yeah, it's still going
what
on.
What do I press to play Tell's cassette? Which is signed
help
up.
Help him, please, Mr. White.
We're going to have to.
Because if I point,
he's only been here how long?
David,
how long have you been here?
35 years. It's that one.
Okay, but you got
to. All right, well, let's set it up.
You got to open the door.
Here's an editorial for by Plato Bank. Gee, that's nice radio.
Oh, I see what happened. You guys go on auto.
I know what happened.
David, no, I didn't touch anything. Bernard's in charge here.
Yeah.
Playing Bernard.
Someone left it out of. Let's see what we got now.
This is Playtell Benjamin on. Hopefully. Is that it?
Great terror has ended. We threw the rascals out. It has been over a year since I was last privileged to speak over these airwaves. Not that I wasn't offered opportunities to do so during the reign of terror. Turning down those opportunities to talk to you over the last year, given the momentous events that have transpired in it, was almost unbearable for a compulsive pedagogue like me. But as much as I long to speak to the learned listeners who regularly tune into this station, or the untutored mobs who perchance stumble across this hallowed spot in the middle of the FM dial in the greatest city in the world, I could not bring myself to cast my lot with the churls, blackguards, and charlatans who had commandeered these airwaves. Sneaking in under the cloak of midnight like cutty persons and pirates, seeking to silence the voices of truth and light under the cloak of darkness, they cast out devoted tribunes of the people who had fearlessly spoken truth to power in behalf of the powerless. Yea, were I a Christian, I would say that they who had been cast out were crucified for doing the Lord's work. But since I am more inclined to ancient African cosmology, I sought the wisdom of shamans and sorcerers, then pitched in to help purge the evil spirits from this holy space. Hence, I raised my voice and lifted my pen to that end, scribbling polemics in cyberspace, speaking out for truth and justice in public places, and cleansing the evil vibes that hung like a veil over our beloved WBAI with the blood of a newly slain lamb. And while I cannot attest to the ultimate effects of these rituals and conjurations, it is a little matter, because the usurpers and mudslingers have been swept away, consigned to the dustbin of history, and hopefully they will never be heard from again. In their stead, you can now wake to the warm basso profundo of Bernard White, the smoky contralto of Janice Kay, the effervescent soprano of Amy Goodman, and the poignant tenor of Robert Knight, who sounds as if he personally feels the pain of the world as he tells us the news of war, famine, and assault tragedies and disasters around the planet. The whole episode with the airjackers was like an Orwellian nightmare, scripted by Franz Kafka and Ishmael Reed, where distinguished journalists with poker wards were silenced in favor of the mindless chatter of third-string mediocrities. The debasement of language alone was sufficient to chastise the usurpacious scoundrels. Love is hate. War is peace. Evil is righteousness, went their oxymoronic screed. Not since that amiable dunce Ronald Reagan called a nuclear missile the peacekeeper have we witnessed such linguistic perversion. Nowhere was this clearer than the cries of racism and sexism emanating from people who practice these vices on a scale previously unimaginable at this station. And the malicious decision to manufacture a race problem in order to mask unbridled personal ambitions, smearing the reputations of heroic white colleagues who have stood shoulder to shoulder with the black community in our protracted struggle against institutional racism, eloquently exposed their moral bankruptcy. For racial arsonists are no more attractive in black skins than in white skins. Equally absurd and duplicitous was all the pious prattle about democracy and freedom of speech from a dictatorial station manager who came to power in a midnight coup and set up a gulag in which democratic processes and free speech were forbidden upon pain of banishment. Instead, people who had previously worked in a relaxed, collegial environment suddenly found themselves under a surveillance regime so pervasive that it called to mind Big Brother and George Orwell's prophetic anti-fascist novel, 1984, or Michel Foucault's total surveillance environment. Under the reign of this reactionary clique, privacy became a victim of the camera's all-seeing eye, and sullen-faced goons roamed the halls, intimidating all who might object to the creeping totalitarianism. With total control of the mics, these pugnacious sucker MCs sought to weave a new reality based upon lies and deception. Yet in the end, they went down to an ignominious defeat. Verily, beloveds, all this has come to pass in the fullness of time. Because, like Dr. Martin Luther King's favorite poet said, truth crushed to earth will rise again, because the arc of the universe is wide, but it bends towards justice. This is Playfell Benjamin, commenting from New York.
I was going to make a great segue. Now I can.
Fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame.
Children need schools more than they need jail. And that's where our society fails. First 7 years create the child foundation. Mandatory.
territory for a healthy nation. And we're fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. We're tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say go down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame. How could we forget that the children come first? We left them alone and they died. No more, tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame. Can't just focus on the kids with wealth. Can't pick and choose who gets the help care. Take another look at the great divide. It looks dangerously similar to genocide. We're fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more.
Near. By the way, I did want to say one thing, that when somebody said to me, you miss being on the air, I said, no, I don't want to go down there, except I saw a movie last week and I wanted to tell everybody about it at the film forum called The Farewell, about the last days of Bertolt Brecht. A stunning, it's not a documentary, it's, boy, he was not nice to women.
Okay, this is another one that you got me about Robespierre. I hate to admit it now.
Bertolt Brecht is the German playwright who was forced out of Germany during the rise of Hitler.
Okay.
And then came to America, and then during the rise of McCarthy, was forced back to Germany from McCarthyism. And he also, in addition to his political progressiveness, had a wife and two mistresses living at this farm with him, and this movie is about those last days. It's done so beautifully. A man named John Schutte directed it. You would have thought Ingmar Bergman had made it. It's that well done. Mm. And you slowly realize all these women evolved, and his wife cooked dinner for the mistresses, and they'd all have their feasts, and he was demanding of everybody. He was like King Henry VIII. But lovable, sweet, and progressive.
Yeah, demanding, but
a pig. But a pig.
He brings that back.
The actor playing the performance is named Joseph Bierbichla. It's playing just till the end of the month at the Film Forum down on Houston Street, and I think B.A. Ayers would like it. I also saw another movie there yesterday that doesn't open until the 30th. A killer called Domestic Violence, a three-hour documentary by Joseph Weissman. Frederick Weissman. Joseph Weissman's an actor. Frederick Weissman, the man that made Titicut Follies, if you ever saw that documentary about the prison complex in Massachusetts.
Say that again. What kind of follies?
Titicut, which is the name of this institution.
Right. I'm feeling real ignorant today.
No, it's just being ignorant and being uninformed. These are different things. You just don't have the information. That's why we're here, to feed the information to people. But Domestic Violence is a movie coming on the 30th to the Film Forum, a three-hour documentary. How the cameras got in to homes where husbands had just brutalized the women, the counseling sessions that are taking place in this Tampa home with the cops trying to consult people. Stunning. Good stuff down at the Film Forum. When I see a movie that I like and I want to shout and make everybody go see it, that's when I missed being on BAI. But now I'm back and I can tell everybody, go see The Farewell, the dramatization and the day in the life of Bertolt Brecht at the Film Forum.
Even that one, the rough on women one you said.
Domestic violence?
Domestic violence.
It's a tough one to sit through, because you're right there with the camera, with the women being brutalized and the bleeding and the hitting and listening to their tough to watch.
Really.
I also want to hear my theater. Oh, I never mentioned, we're going to resume the theater ticket service 2 weeks from now.
Thank goodness.
And I've told you both the story, and I did say it on the Tuesday, that when I went to see Ali, the movie with With a surprisingly good performance by Will Smith, which did surprise me.
Have you seen it yet?
Yes.
I was angry when I read that Will Smith was playing Muhammad Ali. I just didn't make the connection, but I like to be wrong, and I was very wrong on that. Mm-hmm. Will Smith is excellent. But I went to the men's room afterwards to relieve myself of gathered water, and as I'm standing at the urinal, as men are prone to do after a two-hour movie, a man comes two urinals away from me and looks over and says, "Are you going to resume the theater ticket service again?" I said, "As soon as I'm finished peeing." Well, actually, it's a little delayed, sir. If you're still listening, it'll be 2 weeks from today, the 1st of February, when we're going to start theater tickets. I already have some lined up. We're going to get tickets for the new Edward Albee Broadway play. And
Sam, puppetry. How did the man recognize?
Yeah, which reminds which part of me? But the which reminds me, we're going to have tickets for Puppetry of the Penis, which is the Jillian. Go out of the studio.
It's like full of children.
The Puppetry of the Penis is that you remember Senor Wences, and he used to do the routines on the hands like this. Well, these two guys from Australia. It's a big off-Broadway hit. Show their genitalia, and there's a big camera, and
they actually show their genitalia.
Yes, and I went to see my friend Jessica Jennon, who's the general manager of it, and she said, "Oh, come in. We're having auditions for understudies." So, and I went in. Now, remember, I said before.
You went in and did what?
I went in and I watched two, and I said to, you know, the place was packed with press, cameras, television, newspapers. I said, "Listen, guys, I'm going to the Y swimming. You want to, you know, take a shower with me afterwards?" They were all over the place. What's the mystery? I don't know what they were all looking. It was stupid. But the thing that interested me is that a year of a battle on free speech, that most of the New York papers and television couldn't cover it. The coverage, the number of cameras and reporters covering 10 understudies showing their wee-wees was incredible. It's as if they never saw one before. Jessica said, "Aren't you interested?" I said, "I could go home and look." And they do tricks with it. They have...
What?
They do... Well, you'll get to... when we make the tickets...
I'm not going to see puppetry.
I asked this was. They said suburban women coming in droves.
Coming in droves.
Well,
they
have...
Coming in droves.
Now, you could really... But
it's a popular show. Remember, on 42nd Street, you can see Puppetry of the Penis. On 43rd Street, you can see the Vagina Monologues.
Right,
and you can go to 45th and see Urinetown. So
it's,
as I've said, when I started going to the theater, the choice was between Peter Pan and The Sound of Music.
But back to Ali,
right?
I want to get to Enron too.
For me, it was. I guess anything on Ali, I feel like it's never enough. I'm protective of him.
That's why I was nervous about.
Yeah, that's what I was scared of. Yeah, I was concerned about that also. But I just felt like. You know, when they started showing his political style, like more, like I wanted more. It felt short.
I said at the end, I looked at my daughter because she went with me. I said, "Is it?" She said, "It just should be. We've been in here almost 3 hours, but I didn't feel it."
No, not at all.
Sam, I think you hit on it with the political stuff. What bothered me was that they tried to legitimize it or give it a heavy background canvas, and they said suddenly he's in the fight in. Zaire. Was it in Zaire? And they suddenly said he's having dinner with Mobutu and Idi Amin. Now, 97% of the movie-going public will not know who Mobutu is. Mm-hmm. And some of them think that Idi Amin is from Steve and Edie. They don't know that. And the complexity of Mobutu, the man who overthrew Patrice Lumumba. By the way, that Lumumba movie is going to be on HBO this month. It's a brilliant film. Yeah. Anybody that gets HBO, look for Lumumba. One of the best movies I saw last year, also at the Film Forum. Anyway, my mind jumps around.
You're very excited.
And I did want to say, I insist that we say something about Enron. If you know, John Podhoretz writes for the Post, and he's not stupid, but he thinks we are. Listen to this. This is on Enron. You may not know it yet. This is John Podhoretz on Tuesday. You may not know it yet, in part because the mainstream media doesn't exactly know it yet, but the Enron scandal died over the weekend. Certainly the details of how a $70 billion company went into bankrupt in record time will continue to fascinate, and it may well be that people in and around Enron will deservedly end up in jail. But the dreams of those who hoped that the Enron collapse was going to mire the Bush administration in a scandal bog were dashed on Sunday when two cabinet secretaries, Treasury's Paul O'Neill and Commerce's Don Evans, flatly assured the public that they had known full well of Enron's pending calamity and did not intervene to save company. Well, now I'm reassured because two cabinet officials told us that they had nothing to do with it.
And this fascination with jail, it's like that's the answer for everything. It's like as soon as you hear they're going to be sending someone to jail, you know, when I hear
But
that,
they also assume that nobody would lie in high political office. That's the part.
Of course not. That would never happen.
But he assures us that there's no scandal. If you read Frank Rich today on the United States of Enron writes, the beginning, wasn't that the best set of laughing Ann Richards last week when I asked her reaction to President Bush's effort to hide behind her skirt when questioned Enron? It's so silly. Why didn't he just say Ken Lay was a strong supporter and gave him a $500,000 and is a good friend and he's really sorry Ken's in these terrible circumstances? Good question. As the world now knows, George Bush told two lies when asked about his ties to the top guy and what may be the largest corporate flim-flam in history. The president said, one, that he only got to know Mr. Lay in 1994, when in fact their relationship goes at least to 92, and two, that Mr. Lay was a supporter of Governor Richards, when in fact Mr. Lay told TV's Frontline last year that he did support Mr. Bush over Miss Richards in their Texas race. This is the president who promised to usher America into a new era of personal responsibility.
To a new era of thievery.
Now, when they, if he gets,
we talked about this the other day, and then Dred came in. The SNL thing, I thought, took a lot of cojones for these people to do.
Whatever that
but
means.
This, right. But these people, here they come back again. And just walk away.
My question is, I don't know why people
aren't in the street about this.
This is so complex.
The people that we're talking about who would be in the street are people who just trust. They just trust what they hear. It's like someone said, this is what actually happened, and then you sit back and go, okay. And that's why I was saying the point.
But you see, it's easy to rile up people on a Lewinsky thing because anybody can identify with a sexual escapade. Enron is so economically complex, it's tough to get a handle on the machinations. I want to know is if Bush pushes through his economic tax break for the wealthy to all the Enron people who walked away with $1.2 billion, get exempt from the...
then they won't even have to pay taxes on the money they stole.
That's right.
But I think it is tough to get people aroused about economic issues, and I think that what they rely on are issues like a woman's right to choose, gay rights, emotional issues that have a sexual component, ERA for women, and that the right wing finances groups to bring those issues to the surface to keep them away from the more complex economic issues that the Vox populace doesn't get.
And to agree with you even more, Jones, is shocking because this is a time where you'd think it would be bigger because the war is boring. Is it a war? Is that what they're still calling it?
Well, I can't remember if it was in the Times magazine, but someplace I read that when this does get to the point where Bush is really taken to task, then there'll be a new bombing. Maybe they'll bomb Iraq. But you know what they call it?
Wag the dog.
That's it. Yep, the dog's going to tell. That's what's going
to
happen.
Right. That's right. That's
right. So just be ready for it.
They tried it with the pretzel, but it didn't really work.
Well, that was about
what is the pretzel thing? Because
I couldn't stop laughing. I'm sorry. I don't wish
Frank
the man
Rich.
No, I don't either.
Yes,
but
I do.
Frank Rich refers to the pretzel. I didn't know what he was alluding to.
You don't know what happened?
No.
Tell him about the pretzel.
Tell him.
He was looking at a football game.
Informed.
He was looking at a football game.
Who was?
With his two dogs.
Your president.
Your president.
And as he was looking at a football game, he was eating up with the two dogs in this room. In there, I guess, in his little den. And he was eating a pretzel, and he choked. And when he choked on the pretzel, he fell out. And he got these huge bruises on his head. So he really fell hard. And he lost consciousness.
I think his wife smacked
him. On both sides.
Yeah. On both sides. Well, that's it.
Now, I'm looking for where Frank Rich makes a mention of the pretzel and two names that sounded like dogs, so I guess that's where the dogs. What are the dogs' names?
I don't know the dogs.
Well, he has their names. Where is it? Well, you have to read Frank Rich today.
But the best is when he comes out of it and says, "Well, I knew it was a short time because the dogs were still in the same position. The same position from when I they're probably shocked. First of all, they're probably looking at you watching you eat pretzels, like, look at this, whatever." And then, when you fell, they were probably like, oh, my God.
Here it is. Now we're painfully aware that the only White House inhabitants who may not have discussed with the president Barney. Oh, here it is. Now we're painfully aware that the only White House inhabitants who may not have discussed Enron are the President, Barney, and Spot, or so that must be the dogs. So we must believe until further investigators turn up a smoking pretzel.
Right.
That's rich in today's
Wait,
times.
No, but it's interesting that, about that comment about bruises on both sides. Then how you know that's no, we should look into that.
We're going to have to. All right, I want to play another song, and then we're going to discuss the Bloomberg administration and the changes and the stadiums. Sign-in mystery guest.
Good morning.
Do you remember that phrase, sign-in mystery guest, on What's My Line?
I remember What's My Line.
So what, sign-in mystery guest, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, Sharan Louise Harper.
How's everything going?
There are people here. The absence of people was part of our existence. I don't know who's waving at me because I can only see silhouettes, but the place is peopled with people.
Yeah, it's nice and refreshing.
Oh. After it was like Lawrence of Arabia here for a while, just vast deserts. So how's everything up where you are?
Doing pretty good.
good.
I'm doing pretty. I've been listening. I just turned my radio off when the call came in.
We're jabbering away.
Yes, it's been really pleasant this morning.
The next program has been preempted. Al Lewis will be here. I hope you won't be upset. I have to keep telling people, keep your dial on. Al Lewis will be on with all sorts of listeners. Omar Wally Clay and Father Lawrence Lucas are joining him. He'll be on for 2.5 hours, and then the Radio Free Aaron.
Well, Al Lewis Live. We'll be live.
Yeah.
Sharan.
Yes.
We were talking about some of the issues earlier.
Issues.
Issues with...